Powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios Red Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from down under outside Brisbane, Australia, it's episode 15 of Primetime Jukebox. Tonight, we take an in-depth look at ska music with Eric Master Sensei from Cigar Dojo. Plus, Dave's hooked on a new album, and we reflect on the life of Peter Green. And as always, Primetime Jukebox is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014, by Cigar Journal. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo Double H 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. It's available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming for the Primetime Network of shows is sponsored exclusively by Drew Estate. Welcome, everybody. This is a late July edition of Primetime Jukebox, episode 15. This is Will Cooper. I am in the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Red Stage here in North Carolina. And I'm joined on the other side of the world by my friend and colleague, Mr. Dave Burke.
Hello, Will. Hello, everybody.
Hey, hey, Dave. Talk to you. Absolutely. Look, I mean, it seems like we just talked a couple times this week. Had a nice week
that's
off.
Right. That's right. Yeah, because I had the week off of work, so I got to do a herf during the day, which is crazy town here in Australia. That never happens.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that.
Very excited as well. And I'm really excited who we have on tonight. We have the one and only Eric Gutmerson, Master Sensei from Cigar Dojo. Eric, welcome to Primetime Jukebox.
Thank you guys for having me on. I'm so glad to finally see Dave again. It's been... It's been too long since we've had a discussion. I see, Coop, I see you all the time. Heck, I can't get rid of you. Me and you, we end up in hotel rooms together all the time. But Dave haven't seen each other for a long time. So
I know.
No.
When we started Jukebox late last year, we were looking at people to bring on. We definitely wanted to bring you on. And, you know, there were a few inspirations that I had to bring you on the episode. The first is when I went to Dojo Studios, right? Dave, the Dojo Studios, awesome place to go, and they play awesome music in the Dojo.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
They do play awesome music. So it's like you go there and you hear, you smoke cigars, you see the whole setup, and they have a great music system there. So that was a good thing.
And I mean, I was gonna say Sensei would always come out and talk vinyl and hockey, so I know the music has got to be great. And the hockey talk has to be elite.
Oh, hockey's back. And hockey's back. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. And the second thing was, you know, there was one of these Facebook things, right, where you had to pick albums. And right. and Eric picked 10 great albums, right?
Well, he's the man.
I mean, they were just like – and what it showed is he had such a good, diverse background of the music. I'm like – I started thinking about it, and I don't know why I ended up going with ska. I think, you know, obviously there was some ska influence, I think, on some of the picks you had. I wanted to do something a little different. I was talking to Dave about just covering a genre maybe that is a little – sometimes people don't pay as much attention to, but really, really good music. So, Eric, like I said, we're really glad to have you.
Well, I'm excited to be here. By the way, I am smoking a Maduro Perdomo Habano right there. I got the Perdomo going. But later on in the show, if we get to this, check this out. You guys are going to this.
He's like a special case here he's opening up.
Oh, yeah. This is this is what you get if you get the Sungrown Dogma. You get this travel humidor.
Travel humidor.
Dojo lighter.
Love a nice travel humidor.
A cutter. You get all this if you order Thursday night. But check this out. Ooh. I got the dread with the dreadlocks because – Let's face it. That would be – that's a kind of – I mean, it's not exactly reggae night, but it's
pretty close. It's close. It's very close.
Yeah, Coop, I have a – I got to say, ska music has a long history in my background. I mean, it's influenced me greatly from back in the day when I was in a couple different punk rock bands in Denver, Colorado. And we played some covers of that kind of stuff. Not very well, but so yeah, man, I couldn't be more excited to be talking about this genre of music that that we call ska.
Oh, that's awesome here too. I'm wearing the wrong shirt, by the way. I'm wearing a mod shirt, I know, but but that will be another day.
We should all be wearing the black suits with like the skinny black ties and stuff.
Exactly. So Eric, you mentioned you are smoking the I just lost my train of thought. You were smoking
Perdomo Maduro. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great cigar. I love them Maduros. I really love Perdomo's Maduros.
I got hooked on these, Coop, when we were down there at the Perdomo factory.
Yeah. I remember.
Not just Perdomo, but I mean, I got hooked on this particular one. I just thought it was so good.
We lit those up in that hotel, like in the courtyard that night. I remember because they were giving us those three packs, and you and I just pulled those out. And I remember, like, you know, wow, these are really good cigars.
Yeah. It's kind of a cigar, like, this is one of those cigars where, you know, if it's not going to blow you away complexity-wise or, like, give you some sort of crazy transitions or anything like that. It's just a good, solid cigar. It's got milk chocolate. It's got some salt in it. It's got a little bit of woodsy notes, but mainly that sweet, caramelly kind of taste to it. And it's just that way all the way through. Nothing crazy, but
right.
I happen to like this flavor. So for me, it's just a perfect, like, I know I'm going to like it all the way through. I'm not going to like get to like the end and be like, ah, oh, this sucks. It's just a perfect kind of just a nice, you know, change of pace to where I can trust what it's going to be from beginning to end.
Mm. Yep. Good job. Eric, what are you smoking? I'm sorry. I said Dave. Sorry. Yeah, this is my age.
You're just too hypnotized by Sensei. You're just your eyes off him.
Exactly.
Because of the show being about ska, in honor of a ska band, the Toasters.
I have
Bradley Magic Toast.
Wow, that's cool. Great, good and pick.
I was talking to Will about it before the show. It's the chunk size is a 4x60?
Yeah, it's the chunk.
It's a great size for this cigar. I really, really like it. It's a great – I love this cigar a lot.
No, I do too. And, you know, I do like a 60. And that blend translated well to the 60. I had that – Alec and Bradley gave it when I was down in the office in November. And I really like – they just come in. Like, they just come in that day, I think, or that week. And it was really, like, tasty.
Construction's pretty good on it too. I mean, it's holding together real well. The draw's great.
Yeah.
No, if you like the Magic Toast, you got to pick up this size. I think it's the best size I've had in the blend, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, I'm smoking. I'm about to light up for the first time.
You got the good stuff. You got the stuff.
So Eric was showing the goodies he has for the Underground Sungrown Dogma. But I got the actual cigar here, which I didn't know I had until.
Ooh.
Right. So I'm gonna let Eric tell the story of this cigar. Let me just tell folks, this is not only – folks may not follow the industry. Drew Estate's one of the biggest companies. This was not just a release that they did in collaboration with Eric. This was like their signature release of the year.
Oh,
I mean, this was like this because they wait till the end to do their big announcements, and this one was like right at the end of these announcements. So congratulations, Eric. Well, I'm gonna let you tell us because you could tell us infinitely more about this cigar than anyone. Yeah.
So the cool thing about it is, in 2017, we gave the Sun Grown our Cigar of the Year. We loved that cigar. As soon as it came out, we knew it was a hit, and we really dug it. It was you know, our list, Coop, we keep the cigars have to be inexpensive. They have to be, you know, they can't be a limited release. So it met all that type of criteria.
Yep.
And so as soon as that happened, we were like, man, it would be sweet if we could dogmify this cigar. So we've been trying to get this done for 3 years now. And, you know, within the last like year and a half, it started heating up. We thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe we might be able to make it happen. And they came up, we didn't want to do the exact same size and everything of the other Dogma, because then everybody would just compare it to the other Dogma. We wanted to make it its own thing. So this particular size, we thought, worked very well with it. And one of the reasons is, and it says it's a 54, but Coop, you're holding that thing. That's a pretty big 54.
I mean, because normally a 54 on a box press would be a little more condensed. This seems like a 56 condensed to the 54.
It does seem like it's a chunk of a cigar. Like, Dave, you're smoking the chunk there. This is also a chunk of a cigar.
Right.
And so this is going to be a full-on national release. It'll be available at all Drew Diplomat retailers. But it's being released first at Smoke Inn on Thursday, July 30th, because Smoke Inn was the retailer that very first did the Dogma. So we wanted to do something special with them. And so if you order that night, if you order a box of those that night, that's when you can get the travel humidor, you get the cutter, you get the lighter, and you could win. One of the prizes is a full on katana sword. It's a Cigar Dojo Drew Estate katana sword. I mean, it's legit. It's like a real sword. Like, it's incredible.
God.
And there's a bunch of other prizes that you can win and stuff. So that's how we're kicking off the Dogma Sungrown. And then after that, it'll just be at all Drew Estate retailers like a month later.
I'd encourage everyone, if you're listening to this, when we air this, this will air before, for the first time before the 30th. Definitely tune into that show on the 30th. I know, Eric, you'll be on there. Jonathan Drew's going to be on there.
Yeah, Jonathan, all right. Abe, yeah.
Abe. And I had a chance to do a virtual event with Abe, with Steve Saka, a few weeks ago.
Mm.
And I'm just telling you, you have Abe, you have the Drew Estate team, you have Eric. This is going to be a virtual event that you have the best in the business. You have the best from media, the best from manufacturer, and you have the best in retail who know how to do this. So this is going to be a huge home run, and I encourage everyone to tune into that on Thursday night, the 30th.
Yeah, actually, the interesting part of this, we've never really done this before, you guys, but the show, the live show, which broadcasts on Smoke Inn's Facebook page, the live show starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. And that's also the exact same time that the sale of the cigar starts. But ooh, during this time, when people buy it, they get entries into this raffle, right? And so, like, depending on what you buy, you get more raffle entries or less raffle entries, whatever. By the end of the show is when we will randomly pick the winners of the big grand prize. So, like, everything is going to happen in this span of, you know, an hour or two. On Thursday night. So I don't know how it's going to go. It could be a gigantic train wreck, but it could also be the most fun thing in the world. So we'll see how it goes.
Honestly, I think if it's anything like what Abe did with Sokka, it will be fine. You'll be good.
I'm just teasing. I think it's going to go great.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm already, my first puff status, it's a little softer than maybe the Sungrown. That's a plus, actually. I really like the flavors coming right out of this thing. So, I'm very I like the draw in this too, Eric. It's not like a loose open airy draw. It's got enough to it for me where if I just have to work it a little, it's that's what I want. I like working it a little. Box press is something that's very airy, but I've never had the problem with the original Dogma Maduros, and certainly this is going right out of the gate really well. So Dave,
I think flavor wise, what people might get if they're wondering. Is you're going to get cinnamon.
Yep.
You're going to get a little bit of salty on the tongue. And the fun part, I think, is remember when you were a kid and you'd like walk into your grandma's like cookie closet where she kept like the cookies and everything. Mm-hmm. And you just smell like all of these like crazy, you know, spices all at the same time. You kind of get that nice, like grandma's cookie cabinet, you know, spice rack kind of, flavors just all melded into one, but predominantly like cinnamon and graham crackers.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting that cinnamon baker spice, that graham crackery, you're hitting all, and you're right. When I put a little salt, like when I put a little smoke on the tongue, it hits the salt area of the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm so excited for that cigar because I have said multiple times when both when Eric's been on the show and when he has not, that I think the Dogma is the best Undercrown by far.
Oh, it was absolutely, it took the Undercrown to another level.
I cannot wait for this cigar. It's probably the most excitement about a cigar all year is this cigar.
Yeah, Eric, this is the first one that's a national dojo release, right? So
it's the first one that came out as a national release.
Right, that's what I meant.
To start with.
Yeah, you've had some go national, but certainly this one, like the Drew Diplomat retailer is going to be able to get this next week.
Right. And the Davidoff was, but it was just Davidoff locations.
True.
That cigar is going to crush.
Yeah.
That is just going to crush.
This, I'm telling you right out of the gate, Dave, this is right in not only my wheelhouse, but it's in your wheelhouse. This is really tasty.
And so for our U.S. listeners, if you want to send me any, feel free to pick some up. I'm going to have to jump on. I got to figure out all the time zones so I can get on there before the thing sells out.
Yeah.
I got to get it.
You know, one last thing I'll say about the event, right? Because Abe put together, I don't know what he's doing for the Drew Estate one, but he put together a lot of creative packages together. And
right. Yeah, this says that too.
Yeah. So like there's a package for everybody, like depending on your budget, your profile. That was, I thought, what was so good about that type of virtual event. And it wasn't just like someone standing up saying, give me the money, like Jerry Lewis, right? It was like there was good content to go along with the actual sale. So I think people are going to be in for a real treat with that.
I think if you go, you can see the packages right now. If you just go to smokein.com/dogma.
Uh-huh.
And he already has them up so that way you can see, you know, what they are. And that way you can plan out what you want to buy. Get this, guys. So I didn't know you guys were going to talk about this, honestly. I swear to God.
One of the
packages is, this is pretty insane. It's the Master Sensei package. And if you get it, you get the box of the Sun Grown. You get a whole bunch of stuff. There's even there's a dojo patch and a whole bunch of items. I'm not going to list them all, but I'm going to list two of them. You also get a 10-count bundle of the original 2014 Dogma. Abe had set aside like 27 bundles for himself, and he put that in there. You also get a 10-count bundle of the 2018 Dogma, and then, of course, the box of the brand-new Sun Grown. So that's a pretty crazy package.
Yeah, and it's totally, like I said, when you look at the packaging of that original 2014 release, because they've changed the packaging a little each time. So,
yeah, we do that intentionally every time. We did the same thing with Bonsai. We did the same thing with Imperial Stout. We try to change it enough so that the guys that got the very first ones, they know that they have the original. There's no denying what the one they have is the original and so on and so forth.
Yep. So that's great. So, yeah, definitely encourage folks. Like I said, there's plenty of good packages. They have 16 different packages, which all goodies with Drew Estate too. They're giving away another grill too. It looks like,
yeah, grill. Oh, yes.
Yeah. I tried to buy one of those grills. They said they're not for sale.
But that
get in
sword,
there. Get in there, Coop.
Sword, baby.
Yeah. And last thing I'll just say is it looks like they're giving away Pulp of Greenwich Village cigars, which is the smoking exclusive. There's a chance of win for that.
Ooh.
I just saw that there.
Yeah, Abe showed that on the our show last night. He has a bundle of those that is going to be part of the.
That's great, and that's a wonderful cigar too. It's part of that.
Gotta get that cigar.
Yeah. Eric, just one other thing. I know you have a lot going on in the dojo, but I've been watching the new Dojoverse.
Yes.
I think you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah. So just so everybody knows, a few years back, Apple made it clear that they didn't want cigar apps, and they got rid of pretty much all of them. We were able to somehow not get axed from the big pruning, if you want to call it that, the big pruning of cigar apps, and so they kind of grandfathered us in. But a couple years later, Coop and Dave, when I showed up to IPCPR, this is like, I don't know, 2 years ago, I think, So it's Friday night. I get into Vegas. I'm ready for the show. You know, my mind is on covering the show. I'm not thinking about anything else. And I open my email when I get to the hotel room, and it's a note from Apple, and they say, your app is no longer welcome on the Apple platform.
Oh, no. And
And I was just like it was the worst possible timing because, like, you know, here I am in Vegas. I'm not really prepared to, like, respond to them and all of this sort of stuff. And boom, the app is just gone. It's off of the platform. And that's, like, our main lifeblood is being in that, you know, in the app store. So then when I got back to Colorado, for like 2 months, I battled with Apple, and eventually we got the app back in there, but we just had to remove any reference to cigars. Like, if you notice, like, the app, you know, you can only see, like, the top of the sensei's face. Like, there's no cigar. It's not called Cigar Dojo anymore. It's called My Dojo. And we removed any mention of cigars and this and that. So we were able to get ourselves back in. But the bad thing was we can't update it. We can't add new features. We can't fix things.
Oh, right.
You know, we're basically stuck in this app platform that we can't do anything with. And then since then, Facebook has made it clear that they're very, you know, weary of cigar stuff. And then just last week, Google put out its new terms of service, and they're extremely tough on tobacco apps. So for the last year or so, we've been thinking, like, we have to get out from under this. We can't be stuck relying on these app stores, relying on Apple, relying on Google, relying on Facebook. So we're just going to invent our own brand new platform from the ground up. And we just started beta testing it about a month ago, and we're kind of out of beta testing now. We're sort of like into our soft launch, and it's called Dojoverse. It's really just the Cigar Dojo app as a website. It turned into like a website. Now on your phone, it acts pretty much just like an app. Like, you can turn it into a homepage icon, and when you do that, it acts just like an app. You'd never know it wasn't an app. But the beauty of this thing is now we can do anything we want. Like, we're completely out from under Apple's control, Google's control, Facebook control. We're out from under those guys' overreaching thumb, so to speak. And so we've added all these new features. For instance, now you can check into a cigar. You can rate the cigar thumbs up, thumbs down. You can see how the rest of the community has rated it. You can kind of keep track of your own rating and how many times you've checked into it. You earn belts as you participate. Like, first you become a white belt, and then you become a yellow belt, and an orange belt, and a green belt. And eventually, in time, you could become a black belt. And then there's even levels past that, which I can't describe at this point. And that's just only part of the fun. There's other things, like you can earn badges. Like, say you smoke a lot of Nicaraguan cigars. You might earn a badge for smoking, you know, a lot of Nicaraguan cigars, or Honduran cigars, or Maduro cigars, or strong cigars, or weak cigars, or like all kinds of different badges and accomplishments that you can earn along the way for your participation in the app. So it's really fun. Like, the guys have been having a great time. We also have groups. So if Facebook ever decides again for the third time that they want to, this would be the third time that they kick all the cigar apps or the cigar groups off.
Yep.
We have the group functionality. There's already a lot of groups that have already started on the Dojoverse. So, like, there's a group for sports. There's a sports group. There's a pets group. There's a Colorado cigar aficionado group. There's lots of groups that are already forming on the Dojoverse. So it's just a really fun new platform. But the best news, guys, for both of you guys is that I'm so excited about is we are completely independent now, Dave. Mm. Coop, we don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about waking up one day and finding out that Google has kicked us off or Apple has kicked us off or whatever, right? Like, we are finally completely independent.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken some measures with the podcast, certainly, right? But don't get me wrong, Facebook and Google go away. It has a huge impact.
Of course.
It would definitely. So good for you. I mean, I took a look at it. It has very much. I mean, if you are used to using Facebook, you're going to be very comfortable there. I encourage everyone to get on it, because there's no better community out there than the dojo community. It's a positive community. You've always enforced that.
Mm.
So I'm pretty excited for you, Eric. This is I know you've been working on this for a long time, and it's a major step for you guys. You guys are going to be free of that. So good for you.
Yeah, and you can, and another nice sort of benefit to this, because the way we did it is, you can use it on your phone, you can use it on your laptop, you can use it on your desktop. It's not just an app. It's literally, it's sort of like Facebook. You can just use it on any platform, any device you want. There's no limitation.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, so we look forward to seeing that roll out in the upcoming weeks. So congrats there.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. All right. Let's turn to some music here. We have some, before we get to Scott, we have a few prelims. Eric, I'm going to put you on the spot with a question here. So we disagree on one thing with music, right? And I'll get into it. So we did Eric a battle of the band show. Okay. Or tournament. Okay. Dave picked 16 bands. I picked 16 bands. And the winner was Led Zeppelin beating Dave's Led Zeppelin, from his bracket, beat Pink Floyd from my bracket.
Ooh, they're both good.
Now in that, the context of the tournament, the Rolling Stones were the number one seed.
Oh,
and Pink Floyd was a 9 seed, actually, and they went up against the Rolling Stones in round 2, and I figured they would. Pink Floyd had beaten Queen in the round before, and I'm like, all right, they crushed Queen, actually. Right? I figured the Stones take care of business here. That was not the case at all. They got destroyed by Pink Floyd, right?
Wow.
So. Are you surprised by that? I mean, in taking personal things aside, are you surprised by that upset?
I would say I'm a little bit surprised, just because I know how popular the Stones are.
Yeah.
But, you know, oddly enough, the Stones, they were going to play recently here in Denver, and this ticket sales were terrible. And I was a bit surprised by that. It almost feels like, like, right, I don't know, maybe if it's just a cyclical thing or not, but like right now their star is a bit tarnished. It doesn't seem like they are as popular. And I've never been a Stones guy. Like, but that doesn't mean that doesn't surprise me, Coop, because I get the popularity of the Stones. And just because I don't like them doesn't mean that they're not a great band. And
right.
It doesn't mean that they're not super popular.
Right.
It's just my personal opinion is I never thought that they were that good.
I'll say this about the ticket sales. I, you know, these stadium concerts as a music fan, and I really had to cut back on going to concerts since I've had my health issues, right, and being in crowds. But they don't appeal to me, these stadium concerts, right?
Mm.
And spending the kind of money, like I'm much more of an intimate setting kind of concert guy.
Yeah, me too.
So for me to go to spend a couple $100 and have a crappy view with distorted music, I'm not surprised. And I think a lot of people now who are, and we could debate about the Stones, was it a great or not. And that, but, you know, that's, I understand it's a debate and that's a personal choice. But I think the people now who are like, been following them for a long time are getting into like their 60s and 70s. And I don't think they want to be going to those types of concerts anymore either. I honestly think that's what's happening there.
True, but you also figure, like, there's so many young people that would just think to themselves, like, wow, I have the chance to see, you know, the Rolling Stones, this legendary band.
Yeah.
I was a bit surprised that it struggled so mightily. I don't even think they had the show. I think they canceled the show, but I don't remember now. But and look, the Stones are a fantastic band. Obviously, they knew what they were doing. They're one of the most legendary bands of all time. And so, like, it's silly for me to say that, you know, they don't deserve – they deserve the accolades that they get, because you can't get to where they got if you, you know, don't have some sort of mass appeal. Just from my personal perspective, I was always more of like a – I always thought the Beatles were like a better version of them, you know.
You know, it's like I still was surprised that they got knocked out, and I was like, the Pink Floyd destroyed them. It wasn't close. And wow. I was like, did Eric muster the Dojo Nation into the vote?
No, I didn't.
It was interesting. No, I'm just kidding. We had a couple of, like, there were a couple of things, like Cheap Trick was beating the Police right? Because the Cheap Trick community came out strong, and then all the Police fans got together and just like started this movement to knock out Cheap Trick, unfortunately. So,
Dave, what do you think of the Stones? Were you surprised that they lost in that round?
I was shocked that they lost in that round. Surprise is mild, because I like the Stones. Well, I like Let It Bleed, I think, is one of my favorite albums ever. And then they kind of, after you get past like, you know, the mid 70s, they sort of peter out for me. So when I say I'm a Stones fan, I'm really a fan of Let It Bleed and Exile on Main Street. And I'm really a fan of albums more than the band. But I was really surprised. And I think, and we had this discussion too, sort of the bands that sort of had an abrupt end. So like Pink Floyd, when Led Zeppelin faced Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, when the drummer died, they just stopped. Whereas Pink Floyd, Waters left, and they sort of kept kind of going, but Waters wasn't there. And I think that's sort of like the Stones that made them a lot of money, but I think maybe like continuing on is kind of oversaturating the Stones, and people hear the Stones and like, oh my gosh, I see them, you know, they're on TV all the time. Like, enough of the Stones.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It might like bring them down a bit, if you know what I mean. Like, because people are like more think of their newer stuff, I guess, and are kind of like don't really associate it with the like I said, like the Let It Bleed type of stuff and that sort of thing. But I was really surprised. I guess I was more surprised because I didn't know there were that many fans of Pink Floyd still. Like, I didn't know they were that relevant still. That surprised me.
Yeah, that's what was shocking too. I mean, and it became clear they were building momentum as the tournament went on.
The Floyd fans, man. Someone got on the Floyd, like, you know.
Yeah.
The Floyd Reddit group and said, vote Battle of the Bands, because they came out.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a – yeah, and then – but they ran into a buzzsaw at Led Zeppelin. That was the one band they couldn't beat.
I think it was good, though, because I haven't really listened to the Floyds in depth, into Pink Floyd in depth until the championship, and I broke out the records I hadn't had to listen, and I was like, wow, you know, why don't I listen to this more?
Yeah.
So it was good in that way. Like, I got to listen to him again.
Yeah. And if you're listening to Floyd and you're looking for a nice cigar to pair, if you can find some Psychedelic Turtles out there, the Espinosa one, Dojo collaboration. Go smoke those and listen to Lil Floyd. You got a nice pairing going on there.
I have a better chance of getting that samurai sword than I do a Psychedelic Turtle and getting it through customs. I have a better chance bringing a samurai sword through customs.
You might.
You might.
Okay. Turning attention I'll go through this, Dave. I won't go to belabor this too much, but right before the show, in fact, while Dave was sleeping, we pay tribute to artists who have passed away and are no longer with us. We did lose a major artist in the music scene, Peter Green, who is the co-founder of Fleetwood Mac, died at the age of 73. People may not remember Peter Green. They think of Mick Fleetwood and John McVie. Mick and John and Peter were part of a group called John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. The trio broke away. They formed Fleetwood Mac. And in those early days of Fleetwood Mac, they were much more of a bluesy band. I mean, so Peter Green was a bluesy type of guitarist. That's really where his roots were. He also had drug problems, which we've talked about as kind of like not a big surprise, but he messed with LSD quite a bit. And it's ultimately believed that his LSD use led to his departure from Fleetwood Mac. But one can argue when Green left, they replaced him with a guy named Bob Welch. And then Bob Welch left, and that brought in Lindsey Buckingham, and Stevie Nicks came along with him. So the history of the band may have been very different had Peter Green stayed there from that standpoint. When he left, he put out a solo album. And then he really started struggling with mental illness. He had schizophrenia. He had a lot of psychosis. Many believe it was from the LSD use. He kind of came back in 1979. He started doing music. He worked on a solo album. He even did an uncredited one of the uncredited songs. There's an uncredited song on Tusk that he did. I forget which the song it was, but he was part of the Tusk album. So he still was kind of a, you know, he never had a bad break with Mick Fleetwood. In fact, when Fleetwood Mac got in the Hall of Fame, Peter Green was on the stage with them as an inductee. So, you know, they definitely were close with that. But he did continue to struggle with the effects of LSD even into the 80s right now. So a couple of songs I'll just mention that are his. In Fleetwood Mac, the original version of Black Magic Woman, not the Santana one, was Fleetwood Mac's. I'd really encourage you to listen. It has a little more of a bluesy feel to it. I think it's better than the Santana version. That's just my opinion. And if you want to just hear some of Peter Green's solo work, Slave O'Day, it's a song he did, I think, in the early 80s. And you'll see some of the instrumentation and just the good musicianship that he brings with the guitar work in that song. So Peter Green, Dave, we have to, I guess, add to the list of people for the homage show.
Yeah, and I saw that this morning. I have a couple of those early Fleetwood Mac records. I should put those on and have a listen. But it's interesting looking at his life. We were just talking Pink Floyd and thinking about Syd Barrett.
Yeah.
Sort of similar issues, like founding members to these really iconic bands to help sort of start them on their way. But then, you know, LSD, I think in both of the cases, really sort of taking them out of the music scene, and in Sid's case, dying too early. But in both cases, these founding members of these iconic bands, drugs sort of getting in their way of them continuing and yet still being an influence. I mean, Sid was still influence to Floyd, much as, you know, like you're saying, Peter Green was influenced to Mac.
Yeah, no, and like I said, you're right. There's a parallel path where founding band member forced to leave. The band never really turned on Sid with Pink Floyd. And if you look at Fleetwood Mac, they never really turned on Peter Green either. So, Fleetwood Mac was a revolving door, even though the classic lineup, we know there's been a lot of other musicians who come in and out of that band. But Peter never went back there. And I don't think, you know, Peter just never had the notoriety maybe of the rest. But, you know, Fleetwood Mac was a very different band back then. And like I said, things happen and history happens. And history might have been very different. Maybe there wouldn't have been Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. And of course,
and rumors, man.
And rumors. No, yeah, rumors. We talked about that in the last show. So, Peter Green dead at 73. All right. So turning our attention, if I could talk about Glee, right, which I did, Eric, on the last show, I had to talk about Glee. We were doing female artists and one of the Glee members passed away. If I could talk about Glee, then I guess it's fair that Dave could talk about Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift, man.
So Dave is a Taylor Swift fan. So I want to kind of turn the floor over to him because he has listened to the new album.
Oh, yeah. Before I do that, I just want to show you. Look at that. Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at the construction
on
that.
This is.
Whoa, Coop, you're inhaling. Look at that. You're just going crazy on that thing.
It's
taking
so
that
good.
Down.
Here's the thing. And the retrohale is just putting another layer of complexity on this thing, too.
Oh, I need that cigar. Need it.
It's much really like good. I need really good. Swift. Yeah. This is good. Yep. You need
Taylor. But really quick, I just want to mention the new Taylor Swift record, which is Folklore. And because it's got. The reason I want to mention it isn't necessarily that the album's great, because it is. But it has a number of things that are sort of like trends in music that are interesting to me. One is an album dropping with like no press whatsoever. So it got like leaked about it and then it dropped at midnight, full album. And like Beyonce's done that, Childish Gambino's done that, Kendrick Lamar has done that. So it's just an interesting development when we're looking at how people consume music now, this idea of just dropping an album without any warning.
Yeah, and I mean, that's true.
I think that'll just keep happening with these bigger acts. I mean, it's sort of like you said, the Beatles sensei. It's sort of like the Beatles deciding we're just going to put out albums and not tour, which at the time was just insane. And they were still able to do it because they were huge. So these are people like, well, I'm so big, I don't need media. I'll just put it out. And so that's interesting development. The other development is that the producers, Aaron Dessner, from The National, And this is another trend of getting musicians from like indie type bands. Jeff Tweedy has done this with Wilco and Mavis Staples and others. I think Jack White from the White Stripes has produced people's stuff. Aaron's produced people like Sharon Van Etten and also done the national records. But this idea of needing a fresh sound and bringing in someone from like a more like a different band to produce your record, which is sort of has been done, like Rick Rubin's done it, but it's just an interesting sort of trend when you're looking at producers and more musicians getting involved. There's another trend that this album has, and it's basically, the record is basically if Taylor Swift did a Nationals record, is what it sounds like, and I love it. And one of the things, so a really good song on it I want to mention is Exile, because it has Justin Vernon from Bon Iver on it. And it's very good. And you get that very, you can really tell that Aaron's producing the record by that song. And the Dolly connection is that Dolly Parton loves Taylor Swift and has her on like her official playlists. So Dolly and I are sharing a moment with this new record by Taylor, which came out midnight 2 days ago, maybe. But no, I just thought it was interesting because it's sort of one record that encapsulates all these sort of new kind of movements in music. And so I just thought it was interesting.
And Eric, for the, just keeping score, Dolly Parton is a part of every single Cigar Jukebox episode. There's a connection that Dave has been able to make on every show.
You know, I got to say, my 15-year-old daughter has on her wall one giant picture, and it's Dolly Parton.
Nice.
I would have thought Jordan might have had it.
But I don't know. They, for some reason, Dolly Parton, you know, she appeals to the young.
Yeah, she's incredible. Yeah. Like, that's the reason.
Well, that could be.
But, yeah, so, no, it's a good it's just an interesting thing. And the National will come up again when we get to the new music.
There you go.
So keep that in mind.
Yep, there you go. I did listen to it. Okay, today.
Ooh.
It was a little slow. It's a slow album. It's one of those albums, it didn't hit me the first time. Doesn't mean it's not going to hit me, because we've talked about sometimes when we listen to an album, sometimes you got to listen to it a few times. Cardigan was the song that impressed me, the second track. That was the one, that was a really good song. So I got to give it a little more time is what I'll say, but it's definitely a slower paced Taylor Swift album compared to maybe what people are used to. Something's telling me it's the Grammys are going to embrace this album a lot. So we'll see.
She's 30, Sensei. 30. This is her eighth record. Eighth.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dave, but I just, it annoys me a little bit that Taylor Swift just says like, oh, okay. Now I'm going to make an indie sounding album. Now I'm going to make a pop sounding album. Now I'm going to make, it's like, come on, pick a genre and sort of at least kind of stick with it. I mean, come on.
The one thing I agree with you on that. The one thing what I'll say is that Taylor Swift not necessarily has reinvented anything in music, but she's tackled different ones and has shown some versatility. Maybe it's not my cup of tea. I kind of agree with you. I like going down a path a little and then switching the path maybe after two or three albums. And sometimes we see when these artists try to go three or four albums with the same thing, they start to die. And she's had a very good decade, whether we like her music or not. She's been successful at it. I kind of agree with you on that. It's an indie sounding album, I would agree.
Phenomenal.
But, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, obviously, there, once again, she definitely knows what she's doing. She's making the billions and stuff. But I'm more of like I like garage sort of rock. So like that sort of like super overproduced stuff to me just doesn't.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can see that, but it is incredible. But so you'll really be into like when we get to ska in the 90s. That's that's your jam, Sensei.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. So no, ska in the 70s and 80s, but we'll get into that.
That's good.
Oh,
so let's turn it over to ska right now.
Yeah.
And Dave, you've done a lot of good research here. I'm going to turn it over, but before you do it, like, maybe how would you guys define ska? I mean, because there's ska. There's a lot of different. There's even different offshoots of ska, and then there's influences that ska has had on bands. How would you guys? If you're saying ska, what are you guys talking about?
Go ahead, Sensei.
And if you don't know, that's okay.
Ska is essentially a offshoot. It's actually before reggae. So you had like ska, and then you had like rocksteady, and then eventually that became reggae. And so it's that same kind of like, you know, offbeat kind of music. It's got like a calypso vibe to it. It has a Jamaican, obviously heavy Jamaican influences to it. And so that's like the origin of ska. But then the ska that we know today, that most people know today, really came from, you know, London in the 80s when these guys took that music from, which we'll talk about Prince Buster and those kind of guys too, but when they took that music and they kind of like put an edge to it, sped it up, made it a little more dancey, kind of quicker, more punk rock flavor to it. And that is really the ska that most people would know of is what ska is. But if you go back and listen to like, you know, like Prince Buster or the Skatalites or all those kind of bands, like it sounds a lot more like reggae, but it has a little bit of like a calypso-y kind of feel to it.
I would agree with you on that.
It's like the original kind of like, not the original, but it's like the ultimate melting pot of music, like what Sensei's saying. It's like a bit of this, a bit of that, you know, and then you have that classic, you know, downbeat. It's like the horns and like hitting it on the downbeat and that classic sort of riff. Yep.
Right. And it's crazy. Like if you listen to, so like Scott really had that all the influences that we're just talking about. And then like, then there was this short span where they sort of called it like rocksteady music.
Yep.
And that was essentially like ska and reggae mixed with like R&B from like, you know, Motown-y kind of a sound to it. Some of the songs you'd be hard pressed not to think that they were, you know, maybe out of Detroit in the 50s or something. They had a really cool kind of vibe to them. So yeah, it's a definite melting pot, Dave. That's a great way to put it. There's so many influences that make up ska, but it's that, you know, that guitar with that, you know, that kind of a thing to it on the downbeat.
Yeah.
And I think what will come through when we talk about the background in a little more detail is like punk, it's a very working class music genre. It's like when you trace it throughout Jamaica and then to London, like Sensei was saying, and then over to the States, it's always been sort of like the working class has always really identified with it. So it's always been sort of a working class audience identifying with that type of music.
It's time to light up my dread, boys, since we're talking about
Light that up. That's a good cigar.
From Espinosa Cigars. I'm going to light up my reggae dread. Just got to cut off these dreadlocks here.
That's a big cigar too, isn't it?
It is a big cigar.
And for folks who don't know, that cigar uses Jamaican tobacco in it.
That's right, yeah.
Yep, so it's a good honor there.
So, I've been waiting for just the right time to smoke this coupe.
They don't make them anymore.
There you go.
They're not making those anymore either.
What?
No, they stopped making them.
Oh, no.
They could. Eric was on Primetime, and he said they couldn't get the Jamaican tobacco. They had a Connecticut version of that they gave out at Lazona Palooza. That was off the charts good.
Yeah, I got that. I got one.
I like that one, yeah.
Oh, look at you two. You got to know people.
Yeah, you got to know people, Dave. But, Dave, you have a good history you've kind of compiled of ska. And I'm going to let you kind of take it because I think it's going to be set the tone for when we kind of go through our discussion.
This was fascinating. I have to say, out of all the research I've done on music, this was by far the most interesting. Because I was talking to my wife about the show. This is when it first came out, and I was talking about ska, and I was like, yeah, weren't they like, didn't skinheads like ska at one point? Like, what happened with that? And I looked into it, and it's shocking. So basically, I'm not going to rehash everything Sensei said, because he gave a good sort of overview of the Calypso influences and stuff. The one song I picked out, if you listen to Harry Belafonte, the Banana Boat song, I guess the most well-known, you can kind of start to hear that sort of downbeat on the percussion of that song that if you replace percussion with a guitar, you're like, oh, this is a ska song. So you can start to hear that some of influencing of like the downbeat and horns and stuff like that. So that's a cool one to look at the connections. That came out of the dance halls with like Desmond Dekker. You said like the Scatolites, that sort of thing. We'll talk about Desmond Dekker later. But 70s and 80s, so Sensei's wheelhouse of ska. That's when it came over to London, and it came into what was the Two Tone was the record label. So sometimes they'll refer to it as like the Two Tone sound. That's like the Specials, Madness. Even the Clash dabbled in ska a bit. Has some influences, but
would you say the Two Tone had a little less of the horns?
No, they had a lot of horns.
They had a lot of specials and stuff. Had like horns everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not saying they totally didn't have it, but I almost think like some of the other elements were more emphasized with the two-tone.
I think once you get to the late 80s and 90s, that's when ska starts to branch off a bit more and become kind of...
Yeah.
It starts to meld with that like pop punk at the time, and it starts to be like synonymous,
yeah,
I guess.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair point.
But I found this part fascinating. So it was very working class audience. And they were eventually called skinheads, but they weren't racist. The issue was is they were all working class, so they all had like the working class shoes, boots from working, and they all had really short hair because they didn't have like go to the salon to get like massive hair. They all had really short hair. So they were called skinheads by short, and they had the Doc Martens and the short hair and everything. And they were like fine. It was just they were all working class. And a lot of the bands, like the Specials, were all like mixed race bands, so lots of different influences and stuff like that. But then you got a rise of sort of pro-national politics in England. And they're like, we got to get to all the young kids. Where are they hanging out? They're hanging out at these ska shows. So then you had all these like kind of like pro-nationalist, white nationalist political leaders kind of going to these ska shows to try to co-opt them to take their audience because their audience was so big. So, and this happened in the 80s, and that's where the skinheads kind of came up with, you know, had this really negative connotation that wasn't there in the first place in like the 60s and 70s. But it makes for fascinating shows where we talked about Madness. And there was times that like members of Madness would get into fights with skinheads before the show and then go up on stage and sing.
Wow.
So, and they would have black artists open for them, and while they were opening, members of the band would be fighting with skinheads in the audience, like punching them up, and then coming on stage and singing later on. So it was this big, like a lot of the bands like the Clash, like the Specials, Madness, and some others around that two-tone sound felt like their music was being like stolen by these fans and stuff, and they really didn't like it. And then it kind of had a revival again back in the 90s with No Doubt and stuff like that. That sort of got more your pop ska. I think a lot of people are most familiar with that is where you had like No Doubt, like Rancid, like Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Fishbone, like bands like that had a ska sound, but they kind of was more, I guess, dancey, I guess, for lack of a better term. Was sort of upbeat, more like poppy sort of ska sound. And a lot of that skinhead vibe was sort of gone, but they had the same imagery, like the boots and the plaid pants and the, but it was just interesting how sort of like the music got really popular. So all these politicians are like, well, how can we use all this popularity to our advantage? Which caused a big riff with the bands. And it was all going on in like that 70s, 80s. Fascinating. You had bands fighting with the audience before the show, Sensei.
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I come from the punk rock background, and fighting at shows is sort of like one of the things that you hope that happens. I mean, that's like part of the fun.
But it's just fascinating. And then when we look at the songs and looking through how ska sort of progressed over time, it's just really interesting. But sort of the common theme is it's always been that sort of working class sound, but it was this whole 70s, 80s, especially the 80s, was really interesting in how the bands and record labels tried to deal with this, with the audience and trying to figure that out. And how the audience dealt with it. Because, yeah, this audience, like, who are these people coming into the shows? And eventually they all got sort of kicked out and they made their own, like, you know, pro-white sort of punk music that sort of they all left. And then Scott went back to, you know, where it was before. But it was this very tumultuous time for the shows.
You know, when I was doing some of the research, too, and particularly when I was researching the bands I picked and some of the other bands, these 90s revival, right? A lot of them, if you look when the band started, was like 1989. And it was very interesting. That was my senior year in college. And I do kind of remember this revival of like this ska, like on the college music scene was starting to get a little momentum. And, you know, I started to hear some of this music, particularly my last year. And I remember it. And it was like probably like by 93, 94 is when they really started to kind of become into the mainstream a lot more. Now, I don't want to say they ever hit the mainstream, but they became more prominent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had bands like Operation Ivy, and there are a lot of sort of bands coming out that sort of like Operation Ivy might even be a little bit earlier, but
yeah,
they had a lot of like the Toasters that I.
Yeah.
A lot of bands sort of came out that late 80s and like really big influx. 79, too. When I was picking my songs, like all this ska stuff came out in 79, big year, 79.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about one band that kind of took you know, started out coming on an offshoot of that, basically. And then they completely changed direction, yeah. Mm.
So you're more of the two-tone, Eric Sensei. You're more of the two-tone specials, like, sort of vibe.
Yeah, so back in the day, you know, when I was going to high school and whatnot, we were like the only punk rock kids in the entire school. Me and a couple of my buddies, we had a band, and I mean, nowadays if you see like a punk rock kid in high school, that isn't even out of the norm, right? That's actually the norm. Like, that, you know, you don't think of anything when you see like somebody with purple hair or whatever. But for us, we were like literally, you know, in suburban Colorado, like we stood out like, you know, sore thumb. And so there was this documentary that was like circulating the nation, and it would go to like your really small like indie film houses and that kind of thing. And it was called Dance Craze. And the movie was really just basically just a movie of concert footage from the two-tone bands. And Two Tone was started by Jerry Dammers. He was the keyboardist for the Specials, right? And so he started a record label called Two Tone. And so you had all the bands on Two Tone were essentially, you know, you had the Specials, you had Madness, you had the Beat, which became the English Beat because of a name dispute.
Yep.
You had the Selector, Bad Manners, the Body Snatchers. Even Elvis Costello was part of the very, very first Two Tone, you know, label, although he only did like one single and it was never released. But so Elvis Costello had, you know, great influence on, if you listen to My Aim Is True, well, look at the album cover of My Aim Is True,
the first
Elvis Costello album. You know, it looks like a two-tone, you know, album.
Oh, it does,
And, you know, watching The Detectives is very like ska-ish and that kind of thing. But anyways, this film, Dance Craze, it came to Denver and it was at some sort of weird like indie, you know, theater downtown or whatever. And me and my friends went to see it. And I didn't know a whole lot about these bands at the time, but man, I was just fascinated with this movie. Like, it was just, for some reason, it really resonated with me. And like, we were already into punk rock anyways. And this music was just awesome. Like, I loved every bit of it. And so we started, you know, emulating the Specials and Madness, and we, you know, we got our creepers and we had our skinny ties and all that sort of stuff. And I remember this one particular moment where like we had all of our like our two-tone gear on, me and my buddies, and we were driving somewhere. I don't remember where we were going, but we were literally like in full two-tone garb and we were heading somewhere, and my car broke down on the side of the road, and we couldn't go anywhere, and we were trying to figure out how to get the car or whatever. So we needed to, we didn't have cell phones at the time, of course. And so we just walked to the nearest like establishment, which happened to be this like cowboy bar.
Oh,
and
man.
So here we are, it's like three teenage kids come walking into this like biker bar, you know, in like 1981, and we're in full, you know, full gear, and we come walking. It was literally like, you know, the in Pee Wee Herman when Pee Wee Herman goes into the biker bar. I mean, we thought for sure these guys were gonna kill us, you know, but they were cool to us and whatnot. But that moment, that whole time frame of my life was just so great. Like getting into the specials, mainly for me, the specials, a lot of English Beat. I saw the Beat several times here in Denver at the Rainbow Music Hall. I was never a big, huge fan of like Selector and Bad Manners and Body Snatchers. They were all okay. Mm. Body Snatchers was all female. They were an all female band. They weren't bad, but they weren't great. But to me, it was the specials. Like they were just the ultimate ska band. And then what I found out later, like, you know, after listening to these guys for so long, was I didn't realize this, but almost everything that they did came from Prince Buster, who we talked about at the very beginning of the show. He was like an early, you know, ska guy that went to England. He came from Jamaica and went to England. So like, if you listen to like Prince Buster, like what he did, One Step Beyond, most people think that that's a Madness song, right? He did Enjoy Yourself. Most people think that that's a special song. He did Judge Dredd. Most people think that that's a special song called Stupid Marriage. He did Al Capone. Most people think that that's a special song called Gangsters. Like all of those songs, almost all of those songs came from Prince Buster, but they put like a new, fresh spin on it. And then the cool thing about these guys, Dave and William, is that it wasn't like they hid the fact that they were doing a lot of Prince Buster songs. In fact, one of the best Madness songs that you'll ever hear is the Prince, which is basically like a redo of one of his songs, but it's like an ode to Prince Buster. So like they really loved Prince Buster, but they kind of brought it to a new level. Yeah. And so in the early 80s, I was just all about this culture. I loved that. I ate it up, man. You guys got to check out that movie, Dance Craze. It's really
amazing. Yeah, I will do that. Yeah.
It's interesting what you're saying there, Sensei, as well, because I have a song later from the Scatolites where it's like certain riffs, right? And you're like, I've heard this like guitar line in like eight different ska songs.
Right, right.
It's more of like paying homage. It's more of like it's not much like I'm ripping off this bass line. It's like just, you know, just built, like you said, building upon the foundation. And it's cool how that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. And the crazy thing with the specials, you know, like, isn't it weird when you think back on the Brady Bunch, like what a great show it was and you love it, but like, it really wasn't around for very long. Like it was a super short amount of time. The specials are kind of like that. Like they really, I mean, they got back together and they did have some other hits. And then there was some other versions of the specials that had a different lead singer and all this sort of stuff. But like the specials, the ones that we really love, it was really just two albums. I mean, it's just boom, the specials and then more specials. And that was it. Like all of those great songs that the specials did came from, for the most part, those two albums. Like Madness, they're still around. Like they had this huge long career, you know, and they had hits from several different albums, but like the specials, like really it was just those two albums. And that first album produced by Elvis Costello, Elvis Costello, yeah. Who I love.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
but the next one was produced by Jerry Dammers, who's the guy that started Two Tone, and I guess that's really what broke up the specials, is because Jerry had sort of like a different idea of where they should go. And Terry Hall, which was the lead singer, and the two other guys, it was Neville Staple and Linville Golding. They went on to do Fun Boy 3, which had some big hits. And they did Bananarama too, right? Like they had girl singers, but they formed that band. And then Terry Hall went to do The Color Field, which is another band that I really, really liked. And then eventually, ultimately, they came back to the specials. But so many of these things, and some of the guys broke off. One of the guys ended up being Fine Young Cannibals. Cannibals. You guys remember that band? Fun Young
Cannibals?
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of history there. And, of course, the English Beat turned into General Public. And General Public had some big hits that I really liked. And
yeah.
So these guys, they have so many influence. They've influenced so many bands in that whole movement. It's amazing how deep these roots go.
It's funny hearing you talk about going to that bar. Like, at this time with Two Tone and everything, it's like you'd walk around and you could say, "Oh, that person's either a ska fan or they're going to a job interview," because they had like the black suit with the fedora hat and the skinny black tie and the black and white checker. Oh, totally.
You know, you mentioned Madness, right? I just want to make a comment about Madness. Like, most people maybe aren't following ska. They know Madness for one song, Our House.
Right.
You might think of them as a one-hit wonder.
It's one of my least favorite songs.
It is my least favorite song. There is, and I know we're going to get to some of the songs that we're going to talk about, you know, I know you mentioned, but that is not who Madness was. And you look at what Madness was, a huge band on the ska scene. And what they've contributed. So, you know, in the history that Dave just went through with some of that. So, yeah, Our House is just, it happened to be the song that charted for them. They kind of went a little out of their comfort zone with that. But it's like they said, it's my least favorite song. And they're not a one-hit wonder. Like, I've seen them on one-hit wonder lists. I'm like, they're not really a one-hit wonder.
Madness was probably, out of all of those bands, they probably sold the most records of all of those bands by far.
Right.
And so they were huge, and they had, you know, albums that, you know, even recent, like in, I think, 2016 or something like that. So they've been around in one form or another. The lead singer is still the same lead singer, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they had some great early stuff. That first album in 1979, One Step Beyond, is a great album. In fact, if you guys – I don't know if you remember, but early MTV – they would play One Step Beyond, the video for One Step Beyond, like all the time. Like, it was on all the time. It was one of their mainstays on the, you know, early MTV when they actually played music.
I bet it's interesting, and then we'll get into the songs, but I think it's hard for people to comprehend how big ska was in the UK during that Two Tone era. I mean, you had every major UK band was either doing a ska-influenced song or was a ska band. Like, I think it's hard to sort of put into perspective, like, how big it was there at that time.
Yeah, it was really that 90s one where it kind of came back stateside. It really started to emerge stateside. Some of those bands did come out of the UK and made it to the shores here. But, like, you know, you talk about Madness, they were huge in Europe. They had a huge following in Europe.
Yeah, think about the first three albums by the Police. The first three albums by the Police are heavily influenced, you know, it has the ska sound on every other song, you know, Roxanne, So Lonely, Can't Stand Losing You, Message in a Bottle, Walking on the Moon. All those songs are like basically ska songs.
Yeah. That's very true.
Let's get to the music coop. Let's do some tracks here.
Yep. How do we want to do this? Want to rotate it?
Yeah, we could kind of go one each, kind of go back and forth, rotate around.
Yep. So let's start with Eric. I mean, you mentioned one already.
So, yeah, I'm going to go with Prince Buster. Look this one up on Spotify. It's Enjoy Yourself. And later on, this was done by the Specials, which I think is amazing. Like, the Specials version of this is fantastic. It's one of my all-time favorite songs. But it's great by Prince Buster. I'm so excited to be able to listen to both of them and enjoy both of them. And I think that if you listen to the Prince Buster version, because that's like 1967 or something like that. It's way, way back. But listen to the Prince Buster version first and then maybe go and listen to the Specials version that's like 1979. So it's like basically like a 12-year span. But check it out. And that kind of gives you a flavor for how all this began.
Yeah, it's a great song. In fact, you know, that's a great song. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you on that.
All right, Coop, what do you got?
So I went back to the early days, okay? I wanted to include something from the early days. And one band that I've always kind of really liked is Byron Lee and the Dragonairs. They're from that early, that's like the very early days. They go back to the 50s. They incorporate a lot of that reggae and calypso in there. It's kind of their sound that got me into like Kid Creole and the Coconuts, which is more of a calypso type band I'd put. But, you know, Byron Lee and the Dragonairs were from that early ska era. It was formed by a guy named Byron Lee with his friend Carl Brady. They formed a band called the Dragonairs, which was named after a college football team they played for, I guess, in Jamaica. They started playing professionally in 56, and they really became stars in Jamaica. And they were one of the leading bands there. I picked a couple of songs from them. The first one I picked is Jamaican Ska. If you notice, ska songs include the word ska in a lot, right? Okay. I have several, and I have three, I think, tonight that from that. And that's what it was. It was Jamaican ska. It was very much a reggae calypso type of sound, you know, but it was it had a very much a 60s type of feel to it. The song was actually released in 64. So this is, if you wanted to hear like really where the roots of ska came from, that's a really good song. They continued playing into the 80s. They have a song called Tiny Whiny in 1984. Again, it kind of a little more of an, again, it was still more of that throwback. You know, they weren't going anywhere, you know, into the 70s, 80s sound by any means. But again, kind of a feel good song. It's a song you may play at a wedding or something like that. And people get up there and it's kind of a catchy tune, Tiny Whiny. You know, it's a cool song. It's positive. It's kind of like Byron Lee and the Dragonairs, positive music that you got from those guys, you know, in the early ska days before things maybe changed a lot with that.
Nice. I'll have to check that out. You're right about that. That'll come up too. So people with the ska, so that coming in on the downbeat is there was referred to as skank. So there's a lot of ska. So ska is short for that, but it's also like, and you'll see it in here, there's a lot of like band names and song names that refer to skanking. So you know you're a true ska band if you have ska in your song title or skanking somewhere.
That's a good one. I didn't catch that. Yeah, that's a good one.
Now, before I get into my song, I just want to give a shout out to the Pacers, who were my original band in the 90s that I loved in Milwaukee, on the Milwaukee scene. You can't find their music on Spotify, but you can go to a website that is called MKE Punk for Milwaukee Punk that is curated by people in Milwaukee. And you can find all the Pacers records there to download. And so shout out to the Pacers. Go to that website. Get Brand New Day 7-inch. If you can't find it, you know, I'll try and ship you my 7-inch so that you can have a listen to it because it is great. But I kind of went in order like Coop. So I start off with the Scatolites because, you know, you have to. So this is from 64. So the track I chose is called Occupation, which they did a couple versions of. And the Scatolites too, it's like they've had 7,000 different band members and have been, you know, it's sort of like Ladysmith Black Mambazo. You look at their band member list, it's just a list of like 45 people because people come in and out and that sort of thing. But this has a lot of those riffs that you're going to hear a lot in ska music. So it's a good foundational song. So yeah, Scatolites from 64 with the Occupation.
Good pick. Good pick, Dave.
You hear that, but it's like what Sensei was saying. You hear that guitar riff, and you're like, I've heard this before.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true, yeah. When you said, yeah, that's good, yeah. But yeah, the Scatolites, I always say it wrong. I can never.
Scalactites?
Yeah.
Scatolites?
But OG, I mean, they're the OGs, man. There's no question about it. You go back there, that's going back to the roots there. And we're going to have all these songs on the Spotify playlist too. So you're going to get a chance to, you know, when we publish the show, the Spotify playlist will be out there and you can listen along to some of these things too, or listen or listen before, however you want to do it.
Sensei, your next track.
So my next track, I am going with Madness, 1969. And this song is called The Prince.
Great song.
And the reason I picked this song is because it is basically their ode to Prince Buster. And the reason I like this song so much, besides the fact that it's just a great song, but I like the song so much because it's basically admitting, it's basically the two-tone movement saying, hey, we're not just going to forget about the roots of what we're doing. We're not just going to do all these songs. Like, cause like I was saying, you'd be surprised how many like songs that were actually Prince Buster songs that these guys did, or parts of Prince Buster songs that they changed. So like, but this is sort of their way of saying, hey guys, this is why we're doing this. We're doing this because of Prince Buster, and this is our homage to Prince Buster. And it's just a fantastic tune.
Great pick. No, I love the Prince Buster and the Madness picks. It's like the classic. I love it. And I love that idea of the song Out to Him. It's just great. I love it.
Right. Cause like, you know, they could have done all these songs and become, you know, known for them and made tons of money from these songs. And maybe nobody would have ever known that, you know, Prince Buster, this obscure Jamaican artist, actually was behind them. So I liked that they just made it public right off the get-go. 1979, baby. You know, this is why we're doing what we're doing, and we're not ripping him off. We love him, and we're paying homage to him.
Nice.
Very nice. I'm up, right?
Yeah, you're up, Coop. All right. You're
so,
up, man.
So I was toying with putting the Police on this list, right? But we kind of hit them, which was good. Because I ended up putting another band that I'd say had a heavy ska influence. And the band's called Graduate. Now, you might not have heard of Graduate, right? But what this was actually the predecessor to Tears for Fears. So Graduate was formed by Kurt Smith and Roland Orzabal of Tears for Fears, but it was a quintet. They did one album together that had a bunch of fusion elements, heavy ska and mod. There was some new wave in there. They would break off from Graduate to form Tears for Fears in their second album. So Graduate only did one album. This album incorporated a lot of the two-tone movement you saw in ska punk. It's a very different – you'll hear the voices and the vocals of Kurt and Roland on this album, but they're playing it. It's a very different genre to what they became with Tears for Fears, obviously. Really good songs on – the whole album from top to bottom is called – the album's called Acting My Age is the name of the album. They said they only did one. It's on Spotify. And a couple of songs, you know, you look where you had that two-tone movement and that downbeat guitar you talked about. Julie Julie. And because we have to have the name Ska in every song, they have a song called Elvis Should Play Ska. And it was kind of like a little bit of a homage to, you know, great artists that, hey, embrace a little bit of the ska in there. There's no reason why you can't embrace that. And that's kind of what that song was. So this is kind of have this Graduate has more of a cult following than anything. And it's popular in the Tears for Fears community, but it shows a different side of them. Yeah, definitely something I would recommend, especially if you're a Tears for Fears fan, you haven't heard Graduate, you can go on Spotify and check it out. And I put a couple of the songs to start with. I think that would be really good.
I love that you have that pick, and I love that you and Sensei brought up the connection with the Police, which is just fantastic, I didn't think of. And it really highlights like how influential that two-tone, especially the two-tone sound was.
Right. Graduate Start was a 1980 album. So it kind of came, like I said, clearly some of the influence that came out in the late 70s was with Graduate when that band came out.
I love it. Love it.
Yep.
I went another foundational member, so I'm going chronologically. We're moving to 1969 with Desmond Dekker and the Aces with a track from them called Israelites. And the reason I picked this track, well, A, I love Desmond Dekker and the Aces, but the other is you can really hear how that Jamaican dance hall sort of ska sound is kind of moving into what two-tone is just going to take to the next level. Because you hear this song and you kind of hear a little bit of what's going to, a little bit of what precedes two-tone, which they really sort of amplify, kick up to 11 and really take it forward. But it gives you good, when we talk dance hall and stuff, like this gives a good sort of idea of what we mean by that. So Israelites, this is the title track off of that 1969 record, Desmond Dekker and the Aces.
Nice.
All right, we're going. We're at your next song here, Eric.
Okay, so my next tune is a special song. I can't do a show without picking a special song, and this one again. Okay, one of their biggest hits was Gangsters, right? I mean, most people, if they heard this song, they would know this song. Like, maybe you don't know it by name, but I'll bet you if you listen to it, you'll know the song. It's a great song, one of their most popular songs. But what's interesting about this song is this was actually a song by Prince Buster called Al Capone. So if you go back and you listen to Al Capone by Prince Buster, the Specials basically took that song and kind of rearranged it. But it's essentially the same song and called it Gangsters and made a huge hit out of it.
I love it. I was going to do the Specials as well with Monkey Man because I love Monkey Man. But it was...
I'll get to that.
I love it. I love... Because what I love about music and about the two-tone is that, like, if you're into it, you're like, oh, I wonder where these songs came from. What's this Prince song about? And then you can go back into and discover other music. I love that about music. Right. I love it. Coop. Oh.
All right. Yeah, so this one, I mean, Eric's touched on this one already. I have Ranking Roger, the late great Ranking Roger, who headed up the English Beat / The Beat. Good job, Eric, by covering that whole name thing, why they had to use the English Beat in the U.S. and General Public.
Dave Wakeling was the other part of that.
Yeah. You know, so General Public was really General Public really hit me. I always liked the English Beat, right? But I'm going to go back to New York in 1984 when this album came out. And so there was a radio station in New York called WKTU. It was the most famous disco station ever, okay? And it was the home of disco. They eventually became a rock station, right? And right before, you get to 84, they were struggling a bit, right? Because they were the biggest station in New York, and now they were trying to find themselves in this disco backlash, right? And my first, but I always liked disco, so I always was a KTU listener. You've heard of actor Jay Thomas, even. He used to be a DJ on there, right? They had great DJs. They had some of those iconic DJs there. But they were trying to find themselves, right? They started playing Tenderness by General Public on there, right? And I remember that kind of really started to catch on when they were playing it in New York. Because it kind of had a little bit of a dance hall type of theme to it, I would say. That kind of got me really into General Public. I went and bought the General Public album, and I was just blown away how good an album that was, right? And, you know, Ranking Roger, he is known for, you know, his ska. I mean, he's known for that. On that album, there's a song called Where's the Line that I just, like, everyone talks about Tenderness as being the hit off that album. Where's the Line? It's just a great ska tune. The horns on that song are incredible. And it just, like I said, it highlighted how talented these guys were. I thought General Public was going to have a much longer career than they did. They didn't. I think they did another album afterwards, but then they went their separate ways. Ranking Roger then went solo, and he did very well. And in 2001, he released a song, again with the name Ska in it, right? Muscle Ska, right? Muscle Ska comes out, right? And this was, by this time, this was when it was becoming popular to do the throwback. Right. So, you know, Ranking Roger came out of that English Beat era. Right. Now he does this song, Muscle Ska, and it's the throwback to Jamaica. And it kind of just in a way, it showed how he came kind of full circle as a ska artist and just really embraced almost all the period that we talked about. He was able to adapt and change with the times. He died a few years ago, unfortunately. I do think Dave Wakeling has continued General Public. I think he's got someone else in there right now. But Ranking Roger, I mean, if there's a Hall of Fame for ska, I'm putting Ranking Roger in there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Coop, I saw English Beat at the Rainbow Music Hall. And then the very next night, I saw them again at Red Rocks, I think, if my memory is right. Like I went like back to back, like back to back shows. It was nice. Great. Like, yeah.
Back to back shows. That's rock star. That's what that is,
dude. I saw the Clash at Red Rocks too, man. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that was one of my epic shows that I can brag about.
When I went to Red Rocks in January, when I was out your way, it was just I couldn't explain what an emotional day it was for me to be. No, I didn't see a concert there that day, but I just felt the history in there. I just like because I've seen so many clips and concerts that were done there, and it's just wow. I'm just blown away. Yeah,
my wife was at the famous U2 show there. You know, the Under Blood Red Sky. She was at that show.
Yeah, I mean, it was. There were two concerts that really got me into Red Rocks. It was two performers. It was U2 there, and then Stevie Nicks did a concert there, which we talked about Stevie in the last show. Mm. She did an incredible concert at Red Rocks. It's legendary in her career.
Hmm.
Nice. Oh, that's a good lead-in to my next track.
Yep.
But before I get into the next track, how's the dread treating you, Sensei?
Very nice. It's mellow, like you might expect a reggae cigar to be. It's very mellow. It's got some butterscotch kind of note to it. And it's a big, huge, massive...
It is.
Toro-ish kind of a thing, but
it is.
It's mellow at the same time, so I'm digging it.
Nah, that's
It's got me in the mood.
Nice. How's your dogma going, Coop?
This is fantastic. This cigar. Here's the thing about Sumatra wrappers, or you know, something's gonna be very woody. Not with this one at all. You're not getting that heavy woody note, but you're getting all these other wonderful flavors. You know, I'm still getting the baker's spice, the cinnamon component. There's some pepper. Definitely get some pepper in the retrohale. Not aggressive. Graham crackery, but I'm also getting this slight black cherry note. It's not an overly sweet black cherry note, but it's enough to just kind of be a little bit of a secret sauce in this cigar. And I love the size of this cigar. I think everyone nailed it with the size here. I really do. I think this is wonderful in this Robusto format. I think you got Eric, I think this is going to be a big hit for you guys. I really do. I'm really glad for you guys.
Like what you're saying, Coop. Just,
I got to get that cigar.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, they're going to be doing this on an ongoing basis, right? It's limited production, it sounds like.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a one and done. It didn't sound like a one and done, though. But kind of, I guess, like what they do with the Dogma, it's every year.
Right,
exactly. Yeah, so that's going to be fun to compare these year to year as well. I like that it's in a box. I like the boxes, too. It's a nice box and everything.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, it's a full, 24 or 5 count box? Yep. I can't remember it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I just want to mention, if you can't see for the camera, it's a little hard to see it, but...
that's great.
The Dojo logo on the band as it should be.
Right, baby. Oh, I gotta get that.
And
cigar.
Never Smoke Alone. That part got a little torn when I turned her, but it says never smoke on the left side.
Yeah. I am envious of you, Coop, because I want that cigar bad.
Yep.
All right, and my magic toast is still going very well. About there, it's just a lot of the sort of like, I guess, sweet flavors, and for lack of a better word, I don't know if it's the branding, but I always think you can taste toast in it. I don't know if I'm like easily manipulated by cigar vans, but a lot of those like great rich flavors and the nuances are sort of gone by now, but it's basically just a really rich, good cigar right now. But it's smoking really well, and I'm kind of down to there, so that's good.
You know, I'm sorry, Dave. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to talk Clash.
Okay, before we get to that, I just want to make one point. Remember on the old Jukebox show, Dave, you do your year-end show. I think you may have been on this one, Eric. Do you remember we were all wondering, like, what's up with Alec Bradley? Now or never?
Yeah.
And look at how it's turned around in the last 3 years with them. I've really seen they're just doing some really good releases right now.
You're right.
That whole Alec and Bradley sort of line with Gatekeeper and Blind Faith, I think really like injected some excitement into that brand.
Even they went back, Dave, like with the Prensado, and they released the Gran Bellicoso limited edition. And it's like, you know, those are even smoking like much. It was a point where, you know, Prince Otto had its issues after getting Scar DM. But they've gotten back to that one, and they're firing on all cylinders with that one as well. So that it's Prince been a big turnaround. Yeah.
The Prince Otto Lost Art is just amazing. I love that cigar.
Oh, Aaron likes that one too. I know that.
Yeah. You had it. I saw that dojo. You were having a Prince Otto the other day.
Yeah, I had one last night. It was a tasty. Yeah. I haven't had one in a long time.
Yeah.
Neither have I. Oh, yeah. Good cigar.
So good, really good job by them. I just, you know, I remember when we had that show and we didn't know what was going to happen. We were all sat there and like, well, obviously they've made some changes and they've just firing on all cylinders now. So good job by them.
Well, obviously they're big Jukebox fans. So thanks for listening, because they heard us talk about it. Like, we got to do something to the brand because they heard the show.
Yeah.
But The Clash is my next one. 79 is a big year for ska in the UK, a seminal year for ska in general. So it's a good lead in by you, Sensei, talking about how you went to the show and were very rock star.
Oh, yeah.
Now, to be the most rock stars, you go to the show and they get in a punch up with Joe Strummer afterwards. Now, that would be.
I would have been the ultimate, yeah.
But so off of there, so the track I choose is Rudy Can't Fail off of London Calling, which is a great record.
Yeah.
But Rudy Can't Fail has a lot of ska influences. There's this whole like Rude Boy. You'll hear a lot about Rude Boys and stuff. Especially in the beginning of Monkey Man, I think the crowd chants it like before the song kicks in.
Right.
And it's this whole, like, in the dance hall, you could be a rude boy and sort of like a bad boy sort of thing. So when it got shortened to Rudy is like sort of the rude boy sort of thing. And I think a lot of this song you can sort of look at sort of early. It's the two-tone, but it's a lot of what happens with these Clash songs, the two-tone, they try to pick up on in the 90s with more of like a punk sort of vibe. But it's a great song. It doesn't have the same sort of like ska tropes in terms of like a lot of the downbeat stuff. But it has that percussion and it has that sort of rough structure. You can definitely see the influences. So yeah, it's with the Clash and Rudy Can't Fail.
I could do a whole show on the Clash, Dave.
We may have to recruit him.
We'll have to do it. I can do a whole show on the London Calling.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what's interesting about the Clash is, so like their first two albums were just essentially punk albums, and they're great albums, by the way.
Yeah.
Excellent album, nothing wrong with them. But then you could start to see that, like Mick Jones ultimately went on to do Big Audio Dynamite, and then he was even in the Gorillaz for a while. And like anybody who's in the Gorillaz, it seems like you know that they are a creative in music, but once they hit London Calling, you could start to see a lot more influence of these just bizarre stuff. And then they went on to do Sandinista, which was a three-album set. It was a three-album set. I remember getting it. I was like, three? I mean, I had double albums, past. But this was a three-album set. Now, truth be told, it probably should have been a double album. And this comes from... I think that the Clash are on my Mount Rushmore. Like, I've got the Clash, I've got XTC, I've got the Ramones, and probably Elvis Costello. You know, like, those to me, like, the, so I'm a huge Clash fan, but Sandinista needed an editor, like, big time. Like, they could have edited out at least one of those vinyl albums. But that's a great pick, Rudy Can't Fail. I would never call the Clash ska in any way, but they definitely had a few songs that were, you know, ska influenced for sure. Yeah.
Well, I think with the London Calling record, I think, and my other record I'm going to have from that year isn't necessarily would be considered ska really, but it just shows, I think, the influence that ska had on music in general.
Right.
How you can, like you're saying with the Police, you can kind of pick out these notes. And sort of, I think London Calling is a good record to sort of show like how big ska was just in the general UK community at the time.
Right. Yeah. Because for a band like the Clash at the time, I mean, they got, you know, with that album, they just became massive, you know.
And one of the best, most iconic album covers of all time.
Oh yeah, right. You cannot have a list of album covers without that album cover on it.
So a little Mick Jones trivia.
Yeah.
Mick Jones actually went to General Public after he left the Clash.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think he ever made it very far though.
That's what happened.
He was just like part of the recording at the beginning, and then that was like it.
Yeah, it's exactly what happened. He didn't make it through the recording of the album. Right. I think he's credited on a few of the songs. I know he plays guitar on Tenderness and Where's the Line. But yeah, that's what happened, is he was replaced in those recording sessions. But yeah, he was brought into General Public as one of the founders of the band originally.
He's all right. Great. Like, Mick Jones still
rocking. Absolutely.
All right, Sensei, get in there with your next song.
All right, so this one is going to be fun because we're going all the way to the third wave. There's waves of ska.
Yeah.
The third wave of ska, like if you consider two-tone being the second wave. The third wave is like the biggest wave. That's where you have like the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and you have, you know, all those bands, right?
Lots of plaid happening in the third wave.
Yeah, lots of plaid. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not a huge fan of almost any of those bands. Just didn't do it for me. However, there was this strange offshoot of the third wave of ska, which was Christian ska. And my kids got into it. There was a bunch of really good bands. And one of them was right here in Denver called Five Iron Frenzy. And they were probably the biggest one of them all. But you had the OC Supertones, you had the Dinghies, you had the Insiders, you had the W's. You had some pretty cool ska bands, but they were all like a subcategory of the third wave. Huh. But my pick here is Five Iron Frenzy, A Flowery Song. So check it out. It's really good.
I love that you have this song on here. I love it. Because I never would have thought, like, I'm going to go crack open my Christian ska music. Yeah. So I love it because I'll get to discover this band. It's great.
I think the next one you want to hear besides Five Iron Frenzy is OC Supertones, and they have a really, really great album. I can't think of the name of it right now, but some of those bands were just okay, but like Five Iron Frenzy was great. I mean, their stuff is amazing. Like a couple of their early albums were just fantastic.
Oh, great. Love it. All right, Coop, get in there.
Hepcat is my next one. So Hepcap is a band that was part of that 90s revival in that 90s era. They were more of a throwback to, again, the Jamaican. The name Hepcap is kind of interesting. Hepcap is a slang term referred to a fan of like jazz or swing music, and they called you a hepster. They're saying the band actually said they named it after a cat owned by vocalist Alex Desert called Hep. So go figure. I guess it was a little play on all that. 1998 they did a song called I Can't Wait. It's got some of that Jamaican feel. It's got a very nice 60s vibe to it. Like, so you feel like you're listening to a song from the 60s, a touch of a barbershop quartet type of influence in there. I don't want to say it's pure barbershop quartet, but just kind of like hints of barbershop quartet or in there at times. Really, really nice song. Hepcat's an underrated band. I think, you know, like I'm with Eric. Mighty Mighty Boss Tones really never did it for me, those types of bands. But bands like Hepcat, which weren't necessarily at the level the Boss Tones were really nice. So this is a good song. I Can't Wait.
Nice. Oh, I'll have to check that out.
Yep.
I'm continuing with 1979. I just got stuck in 1979 in my song list here. Because 79, we had, you know, the specials which Sensei covered. We had Clash of London Calling. We had Bob Marley came out with the record Kaya in 1979. So this is also a shout out to Nick Melillo. I hope you enjoy this. Because I was like, I was like, Coop, I don't have a ska song with either ska or skankin referenced in the song. I need to have that to have an official ska song list. And Bob Marley came out with this record. The Scatolites actually played with Bob Marley, before. So that it's really shows like how reggae and ska, they're very close cousins if nothing else. And so they sort of, you know, go in and out of influence. And so the song I chose is Easy Skankin'. Because you have to have a ska, like you have to have a list that has skankin' or ska in the title. And so I checked, Easy Skankin' is off of Kaya, and it has these connections with Scatolites, and that's sort of early ska movement in Jamaica. So I had that from Marley. Now this is the secret song, I think, from Eric that I don't know of yet.
What? Oh, is it my turn already?
It is your turn already.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he has two secret songs. He actually has two secret songs.
Yeah, I have two because I saw that you guys had more than me, so I added a couple here.
That's okay.
So I picked. This is a great, great cover tune. So way back in the day, Toots and the Maytals did a song called Monkey Man, and then later the Specials did Monkey Man, which was one of their big hits. But yep. Get this, none other than Amy Winehouse in 2006 covers Monkey Man, and she does complete justice to the song. Like, it is absolutely phenomenal. If you're not an Amy Winehouse fan, then I am. I'm a big Amy Winehouse fan. But if you're not an Amy Winehouse fan, at least check out Monkey Man from 2006. Absolutely awesome. Check it out.
I'll have to do that. I haven't heard that song yet. I got to check that out. I never would have guessed that.
Oh, baby. Dave is going to change your world. Change your world.
I'm going to listen to the Toots and the Specials and then her. I'm going to see the progression.
Ah, it's a genius idea.
Great. Coop.
All right.
You're going Madness, it looks like.
Well, I'll mention Madness a little more. Because I think Eric covered it pretty good, and we covered it. I'll just mention the other song I really like from them is Night Boat to Cairo.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. So that's just, again, another track of theirs, you know, folks might not have heard of. But, again, it just kind of really showed – I thought that was more in the ska lines of, you know, of that band. So I just –
Hey, Coop, did you ever hear My Girl by Madness?
Yes.
Oh.
Great. Oh.
Such a great song.
It really is. I mean – like I said, you know, it's funny. You talk to someone about Madness and they don't know ska. There's a whole plethora. I mean, they would be Hall of Fame for the Ska Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, by the way, before the show ends, we should make a Ska Hall of Fame, and we can only add what, six bands, two from each of us get to go in.
Okay.
Ooh.
We'll wrap it up with that. I like it.
Right. Skank and Pickle. No, I'm just
kidding. Yep.
All right, who's up?
That's me. So this is my last one, and I want to get something off the third wave. Like Eric, I'm not a big fan of the third wave. I never really got in the Boss Tones. I liked Rancid when they're on the radio at the time.
Yeah, Rancid's really kind of cool. I kind of like Rancid.
Yeah, I never really got like into them, but I liked hearing them. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they have a cover band. Some Rancid did it like a ska punk cover band called Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. They did a cover of Jolene, so you can check that out. But I went with Fishbone.
Nice. I like Fishbone. Excellent pick.
96. I mean, I don't know. Sensei, would they ever get really big? I mean, they're on Saturday Night Live once. I really liked them. The lead singer strutting around with like the mohawk and a cane and like a great step. But it's sort of your classic two-tone vibe, which other bands weren't really doing. They're more like that ska punk sort of thing. But the track I chose is Party at Ground Zero, which was from 1996 from Fishbone.
That's a great song.
I love that. Yeah. That's another one.
That's my ska. Done.
You're Boom. Done.
I like it.
You're done.
So you got more stuff. You guys got more stuff, though. What do you
Coop,
got, Sensei?
You got another one?
I got two more, so let me do the next one. So, you know, we kind of, you know, when it comes to ska, and Eric, you've already kind of talked a little about this, right? The female artists don't really get the credit a lot of times. I'm not saying there were none, but most of the bit, you know, it seemed like the male artists were more dominant here. Mm-hmm. But there is a band that came out, they formed in 1989. A lot of people consider No Doubt like one of the great female led ska band, but they're not a ska band. They're ska influence, is what I'll say.
Yeah, right.
This was more of a ska band, and this was the Dancehall Crashers. And, you know, they brought more of a punk pop kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, a punchy type of song. They brought that punchiness in, right? Not necessarily, you know, just kind of a more upbeat, punchy style. Their album, Honey, I'm Homely, 1997, it's considered... Yeah. I love the album cover, by the way. It's got the homely housewife on it, right? And the guy's coming in with flowers, and she's, like, horrified, right? You got to look at that album cover, right? But Honey, I'm Homely is one of the great albums of the 90s. Not just great ska, but it's a great album of the 90s. And like I said, it has, like I said, a little more of that punchy thing. And there's a couple of tracks off there. Lost Again is one I'll mention. Another one I'll mention off that same album is called Salted. And that's a little tribute to Aaron Loomis, who Hector calls the salty one. So, hey. But I mean, Dancehall Crashers, like I said, I think they kind of get lost because, again, bands like the Boss Tones and in the 90s overshadowed them. But that is as good an album as come out in the 90s. Would have definitely been up for my album of the year in 97 for sure.
And Sensei, you have another one?
I want to throw one last one on there because I just don't know if people realize how much early Police, you know, like people think of like Synchronicity and Ghost in the Machine and all that sort of stuff, but their first three albums were really good and they were very heavily ska influenced. So I picked them So Lonely. This is 1978. I can never say the name of the album title very well. Outlandish D'Amour, I think.
Close enough.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But So Lonely is the closest thing that you can get to just a good, solid punk ska song. In fact, I highly recommend revisiting those first three albums by The Police because I kind of soured on The Police, to be honest with you, like in time, but because they kind of just got a little too, I don't know, I don't know. They changed.
Too much sting.
Yeah.
Too much sting, man.
Yeah, exactly. Too much sting. But early on, those first three albums were great. It was like a good mix of like punk, pop, and ska all together. And I mean, come on, the drumming. I mean, geez, you're not going to find a better drummer. So check it out. So Lonely by The Police. It's a great one.
No, that's great. I was just going to say, that much like Eric, I could sympathize because, like, I think Sting soured my vision of The Police. And I really need to go back to The Police.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I actually liked all five albums they did. Really, they were great albums. You go back to Orlando Still More, and Eric, you nailed it with especially So Lonely. That is also just an incredible live song they do. They do that one really good live. So if you get some live cuts of that song, I'd encourage you to check it out. Sometimes they've wrapped up concerts with that one as well. So,
I mean, everybody knows Roxanne and Coop. If you listen to Roxanne, like that's just got the reggae ska beat through the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. And when you say that, it's kind of like if you listen, like Roxanne's one of the most overplayed songs, unfortunately. But if you listen to it with the mindset you just said, totally right. I mean, and it will give you a different appreciation of the song when you listen to it and kind of look for those elements that you're talking about.
Right. Boys, the best names in ska, get this. I got two of them for you.
Go ahead.
The lead singer. Well, I'll skip him first. I'll go to the guitarist for the Specials, Roddy Radiation. All right.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, what a name. But there's a better one. Bad Manners, the lead singer, Buster Blood Vessel. I mean, come on. That's incredible.
That tops ranking Roger. That tops ranking.
Yeah, it does. Now, Coop, you were talking about female ska artists. And earlier I had mentioned the Body Snatchers, which was part of the two-tone. But also the Selector, which was an original two-tone band, that was fronted by a female singer as well.
No, and Dave's going to be talking one at the end of his band towards the end. I'll hold off. There's another female one, which is newer. But yeah, no, it's a good point. But it seems that the female ones, they do get lost when it comes to ska for whatever reason.
But there's more than you think when you get...
There is more than you think, yeah. But yeah. I agree. I'm not saying there weren't any, yeah. But we actually just did a Woman in Music show the one before, so that's why I started kind of looking down that road a little to do some tie-in. But you're right.
Did you guys have Blondie in the Women in Music?
Yeah, Coop talked Blondie.
I had Blondie and Amy. I had Blondie and Amy Winehouse on there.
Ah, Blondie is one of the best of all time, without question. And get this, Blondie did The Tide Is High, one of their biggest hits. Right.
Well, there you go. That's a great.
That was a ska cover by the Paragons from like 1967.
Yeah.
So that has influences. And get this, Chrissy Hynde and every single one pretty much of the Go-Go's sang backup on the second Specials album, More Specials.
That I didn't know.
Yeah.
Mm.
That I did not know that.
So they got a lot of, think of that. Chrissy Hynde, Tina Weymouth. I mean, they were all, backup singers on the album More Specials.
Yeah, that's a great. Incredible. That's a great point you make.
Dave, any other hidden tracks? Go in there.
I got one more, and this is for you.
Whoa.
The Porkers.
The Porkers.
All right, talk me through this.
Okay, I love it. All right, so the Porkers are an Australian ska band.
All right.
They originally had the name The Pork Hunts. Yeah. HUNTS. So like Mike.
Sound
great.
Okay. All right.
So like Mike Hunt, Pork Hunts.
Okay.
They have a little bit of that dance hall band like quality. I don't want to say big band. That's a wrong word. But they have a little bit of that dance hall band quality to them. And they have a great song, Dave, called Swing Like Tiger Woods.
All right.
Yeah, and it's a good song. I mean, it brings some of that dancehall quality to it. So I wanted to bring a little bit. The Porkers have a cult following. They have a cult following, not just in Australia. They have a pretty decent following there. So
I'll check it out.
I wanted to pull one of them. I wanted to pull that one out just for you there. And they are on Spotify.
Another Australian ska band that does mainly instrumentals is the Melbourne Ska Orchestra.
Yes.
Is another one.
Yes, that's true.
And they'll ska up like Imperial March from Star Wars and stuff like that.
Yeah. So before we kind of get into the new music 45, do we want to pick our two artists for the Ska Hall of Fame?
Now here's the rule. We can't duplicate. So
That's fair enough.
Let you go first. You go. It was your idea, Sensei, so you go first so we can't steal your thunder.
Okay, so I have to put on the Specials. I mean, that has to be my number one pick.
Yep.
And who's your other one, so we don't steal it?
Oh, well, somebody else go. I can't take the two best ones. This will be a snake draft.
Okay, so we'll go. Okay, so I'll you want to go next, Dave, or you want me? It doesn't matter.
I'll go next. Okay. I mean, it's not like part of the two-tone thing, but I'll go Desmond Dekker and the Aces. I love Desmond Dekker, and I like that vibe.
Okay, that's a good one.
How about you, Coop?
I'm going as a solo artist, Ranking Roger. I'm putting Roger in the Beat, General Public, solo. So I'm going to put him in as the solo artist there.
All right, so we'll do a snake draft. So that Coop, you get to go again.
Okay, so I'm gonna go a little different here. I'm gonna go foundational and pioneering. I'm putting Byron Lee and the Dragonaires in there.
Nice.
So again, kind of putting someone from the old era in there.
Right.
And leaving some other ones for you guys.
Okay, Dave.
I'm torn, but I'm hoping that Eric will help me out at the tail end. So you gotta have like Madness on there, like you have to.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of figured one of you guys were gonna take it, so.
So I'll put Madness on there because they gotta be on there.
I'm so glad that you picked that because I figured Dave, Madness and Prince Buster have to be on there.
Yes.
And if you would have picked something other than those, then I would have been forced to only pick one of them. So I'm gonna finish it off with Prince Buster, who I believe basically started it all. In fact, he helped the Scotlights with their sound system. I mean, that guy was involved in every aspect of the, the formation of what we know of as ska. So he has to be on there. But I'm glad that you picked Madness because they're probably one of the most famous bands of all time.
Yeah. So if you're listening out there, just forget the third wave. Just pretend the third wave didn't happen.
Right.
Just get into these bands. check them out, and then branch out from there.
So let's just recap. I had Byron Lee and the Dragonairs and Ranking Roger. Eric, you had the Specials, and you had
Prince Buster.
Prince Buster. And Dave, you had Madness and
Desmond Decker.
Desmond Decker. I mean, that's a solid Hall of Fame there.
That is a solid Hall of Fame.
Yep. That is very good. Very good. If you have any other ones, give us some comments or whatever. You can always email us. You can cigarjukebox@gmail.com or coop@cigar-coop.com or comment on where the show is going to be. Before we get into the new music 45, but before we do that, I just want to mention Cigar Hustler. You know, Mike and Greg, the guys at Cigar Hustler, they have a great store down in Deltona, Florida. They also own a Postani brand. They also have the Cigar Hustlers podcast. One of the epic Smoke Night Lives is with Eric. Eric and Mike had a little bit of I think it was a little good fun. It was pretty interesting discussion they had.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. It was highlighted by a bunch of hijinks going on in the backyard of Mike's house.
Oh, jeez.
There was like a unicorn running around or something like that. But no, they have a great podcast. Mike, go see those guys. They have a great selection of cigars. And you go visit them at cigarhustler.com. Mike said he's low on stock right now of a lot of stuff, I guess, you know, of the Postani stuff. But he did say he's committed to trying to get the War Bear Toro out this year. We had him on Thursday night.
Yeah, it's a good cigar.
Yeah, so definitely check out the good guys.
Now, before the new music, just one last cigar check. How's everybody doing? I'm still working on it. Like, this lasts a long time.
You really got a lot out of that.
Nice, cool burn. Nice firmness on here. So, you know, great flavor. I'm basically wanting to, roach clip this thing at this point. It's really good, Eric. I think people need to get their hands on this cigar. If you're a Drew State Dojo fan, whatever, you know, a cigar fan, get this cigar. This is getting a big thumbs up from me on. Nice. I haven't scored it or anything, but it's, you know, it's hard to split it, but very positive.
Well, how many cigars do you have a chance to buy and get a samurai sword? Like, exactly. I mean, you know,
I mean, come on.
That has to help the score a little. That has to put it up.
But some of those swag kits are great that you have. So, I mean, it's a good opportunity. Again, to encourage folks to listen on the 30th. If you're listening before that date. And then sometimes Abe runs the specials a couple of days afterwards, I think. So, you know, he gives people a chance. Maybe we didn't tune in that night, but stuff could sell out. So,
How's your dread going,
Eric? Ah, it's going nice. Nice burn, great draw. You know, nothing crazy. Like I said, it's just mellow and it's sort of stayed that way.
Nice. All right. Coop made an allusion to it. So side A, I had to pick a ska band that's out now. Now, this track came out in 2018, but it was one of the better, newer ska bands I found, and they're making new stuff. It's called The Interrupters, is the band, and it's a female-led band. It is sort of kind of firmly in that third wave of kind of more like a ska-punk kind of hybrid, but it's definitely got a good ska vibe. And the track, I think it's the title track of... the EP, it's sort of a throwback to Rancid sort of a sound. And it's She's Kerosene is the name of the track. Mm. She's Kerosene by The Interrupters.
Nice.
So I get some new ska in there.
Loved that track. Loved that album, Fight the Good Fight. Has a song called Title Holder. There's a song called Rumors and Gossip, I guess, you know, in there. Again, great theme. This would have been an album. Fight the Good Fight would have been an album. If we were doing album of the year nominations in 2018, would have been up there. This is one of the, I think, if you're looking for a ska band today, The Interrupters are absolutely on the list.
Yeah, check it out.
Yep.
My side B, we're going full circle. We talked about Aaron producing the Taylor Swift record. And a bluegrass singer by the name of Molly Tuttle is branching out of bluegrass, and she just dropped a single. She's doing a whole covers album. And the track that she covers is Fake Empire, which is a national song off The Boxer. And so we're going full circle nationals with Molly and the Molly Tuttle and her track Fake Empire. And I like to say a podcast people
Wait, can I make one more comment?
Yep.
That could be one of my record of the year candidates. Fake Empire.
Ooh, so it's good.
Two, I mean, it sounds like I'm saying this after everything, but no, you actually picked two really good ones this year. This, you know, two ones that really connected with me. That's song we may be seeing when we do our end of the year list. So yeah,
it's a good track.
Yeah, two good ones.
But that album, I think the whole album drops in August, but you can get this track, and I think another track is out now. But a podcast called The Ska Geek.
Hmm.
This is a current podcast on ska music where they play a lot of new music. So if you're a ska fan out there, check out this podcast. In the podcast notes, they list all the songs so you can track them down. It's The Ska Geek.
Excellent.
Done.
Excellent. All right. Let's see. I think we've hit everything. Eric, anything else you want to add before we kind of wrap it up?
Well, I just got to say, it was a blast hanging with you guys. I love talking the old stuff. You know what's, I don't know if you know, I have six kids, right? And they're all in the younger generation. They've listened to, you know, the stuff that comes out nowadays and whatnot. But I force them, but I make sure that they are aware of their music history. So I'll give them like a homework, you know, like you guys need to go, all right, you need to hear, you know, Madness and the Specials, or you need to hear like Blur and Oasis, or you need, you know, go and Blondie the Pretender. Like I give them like, so that they can be well versed in, you know, the old stuff too. And it's cool to revisit this stuff with your kids because they hear it and they're like, wow, this is actually really awesome, you know, music. And so it forces me to go back and listen to this stuff as well. And, you know, I just got to say, like, the late 70s through, you know, 1989, 79 to 89, in my opinion, it's the greatest decade in music. So thank you guys for letting me be a part of this, because it brings back so many awesome memories.
What was good?
No, thanks for coming on. Yeah, I love it. I love the knowledge.
Yeah, and we all kind of brought different eras, I think, into this too, which was really good. I think we hit the whole gamut with that on the show, which I thought was great. So, yeah, you really had some great insights, Eric. Thank you again.
And you just
honored to be a part. Honored to be a part.
You inspired another show. We'll have to do it. Well, we got to do a show on The Clash.
Yeah.
And
we'll have to do another show where we each talk about the best decade in music.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be good. Hey, by the way, Britpop, the Britpop era, you want to talk Blur? Okay, Blur or Oasis? Who's your pick?
Oasis for me.
Oasis. Ooh, but it's close.
Blur. I'm Blur 100%, baby. Yeah, you got to give Blur their due. I don't know if you've given Blur their due. You realize that Blur eventually turned into the Gorillaz. I mean,
yeah,
Blur,
you big, and the Good, the Bad, and the Queen is the Blur and the Clash.
In Spiral Carpets, The Charlatans, Suede, all those bands. I mean, I love the whole Britpop era. That was a great era.
Another show we got to do, Britpop. I'm all about that.
And Album Archaeology on London Calling.
Yes.
Oh.
So Album Archaeology is where we dive into an album in detail, and we go through all the tracks. And I want to mention that because our next show, scheduled for early August, we are doing Album Archaeology number 3. And Hector Alfonso is going to join us, and we are going to tackle The Unforgettable Fire by U2.
Oh, cool.
So
that came out in August of, what, 84 or something?
It came out, I thought it was a little later in the year, but I think it was around the right when the fall was starting. I know that for sure because I have a whole story about trying to get a concert ticket to them. I'll tell on that show. It's a long story. And I couldn't even get my dad to get the concert ticket. It was so hard to get.
Ooh.
So we're going to go through that in a lot of detail. We won't want to miss that. And Hector and I have talked about this album a lot over the years. So Hector's going to join us for that. And then on Jukebox episode 17, that's episode 16. On 17, we'll have in late August, Bear Duplessis is going to be making the Jukebox debut. And he is he's going to be part of the tribute show we're doing for Little Richard. So Bear has a lot of expertise in Little Richard, and he kind of came to us and said, I want to be part of the show, and we got him on. So we have some big we're booked, I think, the rest of the year. So some of these other shows we're probably overbooked at this point, so we're gonna have to, Dave, we'll have to figure that out.
Music, 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 man. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good. We really appreciate you, Eric. Best of luck to you with the release coming up and everything with the dojo. We're excited about it. And most importantly, Eric, we got to figure out where we're going next year.
Yeah, I know. We got to get back. Me and Coop got to get back on the road. It doesn't feel right not being on the road with my buddy.
I know. I mean, so just for folks who don't know, I've traveled with Eric more than my wife. It's true. I've been to more countries with Eric than my wife. So yeah, we'll definitely have that in there. But that's going to wrap up Primetime Jukebox Episode 15 into the annals of history for July 2020. We'll see everybody for Episode 16. Have a super rest of the month, everybody. We'll see you then.